Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Pickle Rick! And with me, I have...
I'm Market. Oh yes, 3 Trigger Anime coming soon!
3! Yes!
And 1 I'm skeptical about.
Yeah.
You're the one with A1 pitches, like, okay. you got, let's see, the studio that I like. We'll see that, oh boy, makes either math or bullshit.
Yeah, it would be like, boy. I don't know, Big Boy working with Adam Levine or something. But when would that ever happen?
But yeah, but we just feel like, you know, a lot of shit happened this weekend with, you know, MX and all that shit going on all around Twitter and all that shit.
Yep. Oh, and don't forget about the Rick and Morty Season 3 announcement.
Oh yes, July. Hold up,
30th.
July 30th.
Grand day. It's been so long.
It's been real long.
So anyway, episode 41, and again, Alex is not here with us, and we're just going to drop the asylum bit, sort of real talk. Work schedule is kind of like boned him over quite a bit to the point where he won't even really be able to join us in person for an undetermined period of time.
Yeah.
But we figured, he actually recorded a little bit for this episode, so we're just gonna let you hear it straight from the guy himself.
Oh God. Oh my God. Oh, I'm free of the asylum. Okay, all kidding aside, I've been absent from the show for a while, and, I'll just be frank with it. My work schedule sucks, and my day-to-day life schedule sucks, so that gives me very little time on Mondays and Tuesdays to actually dedicate to doing this show on a regular basis. So for the time being, I'm going to have to informally step back a bit from my role on this show, not as a host, but more of a contributor. I'm still going to pop in for, you know, segments and new tracks and all that kind of stuff, but I probably won't be on here as a full-time host for a while, not until things get all cleared up on my end. So sorry for all the inconvenience, sorry for missing all these shows. But life sucks, I can't do anything about it, and this is pretty much the best that I can come up with. I'll still be here in a way, but not all the way. So, thanks for listening, thanks for understanding. Back to these two knuckleheads.
Thanks for those kind words, and hey, I'm not a knucklehead! And neither is Mark, how dare you!
Wait, what?
He said knuckleheads, plural.
I do.
He didn't do anything. Come on, Alex. Like, remember, Mark doesn't break into your house. But yeah, Alex will be sort of MIA for the time being, apart from any, you know, additional recordings that we'll be able to, splice in later. As well as possibly a special extra thing that may or may not be happening soon.
Yeah.
But we must carry on and, you know, do the usual nonsense. Speaking of nonsense, time for the formalities, or as I like to call it, where we talk about anything but music. So,
yep.
Any exciting things on your end, Mark?
Let's see. Remember what I said last week, there was no rain? Guess what? It fucking happened again. it's like they just said, oh, you want no rain? Well, fuck you. You're going to get all the rain you can get.
Just to check, did you see anyone doing any rain dances anywhere?
Let's see, I saw a goat, but that's about it.
Hmm. Okay, then. Because, I mean, it has been raining around here, so as far as I know, no one's been doing any weird mythical magic shit. So, anyway, as far as on my end, went to the movies this past weekend. Of course, saw Baby Driver for the second time. Still excellent, by the way.
I still need to see that. I really need to see, like, this week. I've been planning on doing that as soon as I get paid.
get paid, get tickets for the movie, get laid, Gatorade. Also, outside of the movies, I've, you know, just been doing the usual, been trying to get through some video games, finally beat Dark Souls 3. Fun game, of course, beats your ass into submission. And speaking of shit that beats your ass into submission, I also managed to get my hands on the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. Actually, before we recorded this, I was in the middle of playing up to Crash 3, because the day I got it was Saturday. I played all the way through, beat Crash 1. Then yesterday, I've been playing all day, beat Crash 2, 100% with all the gems and crystals. And now I'm up to, like, the levels 15 to 20, I believe. Possibly level 18 or so. But yeah, as far as... because I've seen it floating around through Twitter that people just keep posting, like, these jokey Dark Souls comparisons, like, when they're on the bridge levels of Crash 1. And, yeah, they weren't kidding. Like, okay, to be honest, as much as Crash was an integral part of my childhood, I never really loved the first one all that much. I mean, it was okay, but, like, it hasn't aged all that well. And that's especially evident when you get to, like, those annoying-ass bridge levels. It's just the mobility and the precision needed to, you know, make some of those tighter jumps. It just wasn't all quite there yet. And plus, in general, that game has, like, levels that go on for way too long. And not to mention other levels with bullshit things. Like, if you want to get the gem, you have to get all the boxes without dying once, which is kind of impossible even on some of the earlier levels. Yeah, if you're ever wondering why Crash 2, 3, and 4 all adopted consistently similar design elements to them, Crash 1 is why. It just hasn't aged all that well. But I'm doing, you know, a review thing for the site, so hopefully I'll get to expand on that a little bit more. Not to mention... oh, man, I wish I could be in on a call when Tyler was playing Crash 1. Just to hear the pure salt. Salt, man. So salty, he should be on, like, I don't know, like, well-seasoned meat or something. I lost the metaphor here.
Eat some fries.
Exactly. See, Mark understands me here. God damn it. Friggin'... I mean, it's still a well-done collection, and, of course, Crash 2 and 3 are friggin' untouchable, but... yeah, that first game, that it takes some getting readjusted to, especially if you're like someone like me who never played it as much as you played 2 and 3. But, you know, maybe I'll have some free time tomorrow, 4th of July, when I'm not preparing for the album roundup, which, yes, is of course happening this week. First one, woo! Yeah.
First one of the things we're doing on this podcast.
Yeah, and we may even have a guest on hand.
Ooh. We'd have a feature, I think.
Yes, we do. Unlike Kid Cudi. Oh, wait. J. Cole, sorry.
Yeah, you got the wrong nigga.
Sorry, all these guys just kind of bleed into one ear and out the other with me. But whatever, such is life. And now, with all those formalities out of the way, let's get right into the usual with the new song discussion for the past week or so. Remember, as always, there'll be a playlist down in the description of all the songs we talk about this week, so if you want to follow along and then discuss with us, you're more than free to do that. And we're getting the shittiest two songs out of the week first. Now, okay, I put one song in here because I explicitly wanted to torture Mark, like I did last time when I put in Drake, but... I saw a song that propped up in my feed that I thought was also shitty, and I figure I needed to put it here as a bit of retribution, because, you know, fair is fair. So, let's start with a band that I have not thought about since, like, my freshman, sophomore year of high school. I Set My Friends on Fire.
Huh?
You know, they were a band once. They had an album in 2008, another in 2011... then they just kind of fucked off for like 6 years. Personally, I was always a fan of those two songs they did with Smosh, back when people gave a shit about Smosh. But it appears that the group has returned. releasing their long-delayed third album, Caterpillar Sex, on July 21st, and they premiered a new single, The Vision and Scarlet Witch. Which, yes, the lyrics are about what you would expect, trying to depict the, I guess, convey this idea of the relationship between those two characters, as displayed in the 2016 cinematic classic, Captain America Civil War.
Oh.
Good movie. Oh. Yeah. We all know how that turned out.
Yeah. Good movie, though.
Yeah. Now, okay, this band, they were never really good in any sense, but at the very least, they were so bad that they were kind of charming. Like, they were an interesting kind of bad that had its own weird, sick appeal. You know, just the melding of just, like, chipper, chiptune electronics, crunk, and weird-ass screamo shit. But here in this new song, like, it's just a straight, like, low-key electronic ballad. Almost kind of sounds like a shitty version of Fireflies. Like, there's some guitars in there, but they're kind of pushed, like, buried so far down in the mix that you just kind of, like, barely notice them. But it always kind of sounds like they're building to something, building to a climax that it never really gets to. And then, of course, the auto-tune on this thing is just fucking cranked to oblivion. It sounds... Okay, the band never had coherent vocals in the first place, but this is a whole new level of just, like... I mean, if it's straight singing with auto-tune, shouldn't the vocals sound clearer? Like, I know on older albums you were doing this obnoxious, deliberately distorted screaming and growling and whatnot, but there I expect some incoherency. Here, what's the excuse? And of course, the lyrics, it's... Okay, I set my friends on fire. They always kind of reminded me of Fall Out Boy, in the sense that their lyrics were always a similar, like, overly verbose pastiche of nonsense phrases. So, like, here you see a bunch of phrases and bullshit like, eyes closed, foot fully on accelerate, I'm not going to make the jump in time if continents don't consummate. It's okay, life isn't really that great, I gave you a funny look when you start to exaggerate.
What?
Maintain mainframe, drain the soul, you know it's more than you're told, raise the voltage once you pass the threshold. Yeah, what Mark said. These are just words. I mean, I'm trying to think in the mindset of The Vision and Scarlet Witch, and I guess it makes sense there, but dude, even like the Marvel scripts aren't this like verbose, man. Tone it the hell down for once. Yeah, this song is just annoying. No wonder I forgot about these guys. I think they basically like ran out of ideas after their second album, and I'm not even sure who would be asking for a third. And apparently they got a fourth one announced as well, planned for some time after this.
Yeah, and it's called Caterpillar Sex?
No, Caterpillar Sex is the third one. The fourth one has a really dumb title that I'm not even going to bother saying here right now.
Oh.
But there's my torture for the week, so Mark, it's your turn.
Okay, even though I didn't choose something you did. Love these guys. So this next guy is Future No Ways Designer.
What's the difference?
Look, if I know he's, he kind of sounds the fucking same on this track. Either way, the song is called Life, or which I'm guessing on this, it might be on this album, Life of Designer, which we don't know when the fuck it's gonna be released. So I mean, what's there to say about it? Like, it's a you got your standard trap banger, Designer saying some bullshit. Oh, and if it's just Gucci Mane on the guest verse for some reason, it's like he's the least bad thing about it. But it's not really one I go back to. It's just something like you know, your standard trap rap wouldn't beat that. You probably play in your cars and shit like that. Like maybe the beats are right, but I wouldn't really want to go back to it that much.
Mark, you disappoint me. I was expecting more salt.
Yeah, I know you're going to torture me you're last week, but I want you to torture yourself.
Come on, man. Get the Tyler salt here. What am I paying you for?
You don't pay me?
Yes, I do.
Wait, hold on. Let's check it. Oh, it says you pay me in.
I pay you... by not ratting you out to the cops every time you break into my house.
Oh.
Yeah, think about that next time.
Oh.
But anyway, let's get on to the rest of the stuff with songs that are actually, you know, interesting in a somewhat positive way. We have the next single, the second single from Boris's upcoming July 14th release, Dear, titled Memento Mori. You know, that ever so classic of Latin phrases that's meant to be a reflection on human mortality and whatnot. And the song itself definitely plays out like a reflection on the state of on the idea of human mortality. The first minute or so has this very sparse early Black Sabbath era kind of doom riff, where it just kind of echoes out into like these vast silent void, especially with the stormy vibe that is contributed with the rumbling low ends of the guitar and bass, this kind of echoing gong hits, and this weird flanger tinge to it that echoes across and kind of creates the impression of a thunderstorm. I almost want to think it's trying to create the musical image of you standing like over a grave or something and thinking, man, that's probably gonna be me in like 20 years. Or if you're me, man, I wish that was me right now.
Damn.
Hey, look, I'm a memer. We joke about not liking life. It's our thing. And when it gets to the back half of the song, you know, the instrumentation kind of backs off a bit. It becomes even more sparse, and instead of being sort of intensely dramatic, it becomes more melancholic and contemplative. Like, that sort of, like, brief pause in your head where you really are starting to think about just, you know, where your life is going and what's possibly going to happen to you when death comes for you. And, yeah, it's just a really mellow, emotionally intensive song, which offers a nice counterpoint to just the intense doominess of the previous single, Absolute Ego. Oh, and of course the vocals on this thing are just immaculate as always, with the gorgeous melodies and whatnot. But let's cut over to Alex, who had some things he wanted to say on this.
God damn, do I need more Boris in my life. This makes me want to draw up a pentagram and give myself up to Satan. Only, you know, the super hot, etchy anime Satan. You know, the one from Seven Mortal Sins? I have a thing for anime redheads, okay? This song, though, yeah, super doomy, super dark and foreboding and scary, and I love it, and I need more. I gotta dedicate some major time to the Boris backlog. These guys are awesome!
Thank you for those opinions, sir. And now we move on to... Wow, are we really only like a couple of weeks away from New Shabazz Palaces?
Yep. It's like, next week. Well,
yeah, it's
this weekend.
About less than 2 weeks from now. 11 days to be precise.
Mm-hmm. And they got one more single they released out of their two albums released. This one from the second album, Quasar Offers the Just Machines. And it's called Effeminence?
Effeminence. Weird name.
Yeah, we'll say, like, yeah, this song is very, like, got this weird new age vibe going from it. It's like, this is a sitcom music, but, you know, but rapping in it. Rapping in from the Funch Back Houses. And another featured guest called Fly Guy Die. I think that's his fucking name.
Yep.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a bad process for me. Song, like, the shit sounds nice and confusing, or at least. But it's definitely like up there. Like, maybe out of all the singles they release, I think there's six. And I lost count because I can't keep up because they release so many singles.
I want to say seven or eight, I think.
I say this is somewhat on the mid tier. Like, I do like the sound of it, but some of the, not much is grabbing most of me through the song. Like, it's still decent. Like, I will say it's confusing as all hell, but it's like, it's, you know, it's their, you know, it's their bread and butter of what they usually do.
Yeah, I can't really piece together, like, what the gist of the lyrics on this one are supposed to be. Like, it's really abstract. Although I get the feeling that it's supposed to be a really sentimental thing lyrically, especially with that beat that kind of sounds like a new age version of Comtrues, and with those like weird, like light sparse percussion things, like kind of accentuating the beat all over. Yeah, this is kind of mid-tier. Like, for me, as far as all the singles, the top of the bar is, like, 30-clip extension, and this one's just kind of, like, a few notches below that.
Yeah, it's definitely on there. I think we're gonna have a hard time figuring out what the fuck going on.
Yeah, probably. It's gonna take some work, man.
It's gonna take like I guess like a month or some shit to get this, you know, figured out what, you know, figure out the song, the shit.
Absolutely, but I'll be working to do that anyway because I love you guys. Well, not you, Steve. You know what you did.
Yeah, Steve, you dick.
That's not what you use a toilet for, man.
Why are you shooting the office?
But let's move on to the next song here. We have the... What is this? Sixth?
Yeah. It's a sixth Adult Swim single.
Yep. Adult Swim single number six from an electronic music producer named Ducky. Huh? This name I'm completely unfamiliar with. But they released a track called NLFTB, which, if you're wondering, is an acronym that stands for No Love for the Boys. Which I guess means you're not going to crack open a cold one with them anytime soon.
Yeah, pretty much. And okay, now I know what that song. Now I know what that stands for, because I've been trying to figure out what the hell that stands for. Then I realized, like the first opening where it says something boys, I couldn't make out what the hell she was saying.
There's this really okay. So getting into the actual song, this is kind of a mishmash of a bunch of like mainstream electronic music ideas. Like, have you ever driven around like late at night and you tune to the pop station and you just hear like a bunch of DJs remixing a bunch of all kinds of random shit?
Yep, I think I've heard this before.
This is basically that. So you do have like elements of glitch, especially with those vocal elements that are just constantly saying no love for the boys in a multitude of pitches, just kind of chopped up and, you know, stuttering back and forth. You have elements of like rave, techno, trance, whatever else the proper words are, all kind of swirling into this like kind of club banger pastiche of
It feels like something you hear from Dancer's Evolution. Or something.
Yeah, it's all full force all at once into your ear holes.
It's like, let's do this noise. Dance. Let's get the fuck dance. It's ecstasy. Take some Molly. Do that shit. Like that.
If I was playing this in Dance Dance Revolution, I'd probably fail within the first 3 seconds.
That'll call it.
But, you know, yeah. I'll admit this type of thing isn't my bread and butter. Techno music was always more like my older sister's motif, but this song, I gotta like it.
Yeah, I think this song's pretty okay. I actually got into it once or two a couple of times. It's definitely like, you know, an okay electronic song, you know, which does play good at a rave.
Yep, so make sure to bust out your glow sticks and plur candy bracelets, kids.
And don't OD.
Yeah, don't do that. Because then we'll have less viewers and listeners. But also because we care about your safety.
Yeah, that too.
Okay, moving on to the next song. We finally got the official album announcement for the second studio release from Danish black metal act Miracore. The album is titled Maredit, and it's due out September 15th. We have a new song from this album with the title of Madablots. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. There's a bunch of weird accentuations on it. I assume it's Danish or possibly Swedish. I'm not familiar with the language, clearly. I'm just some pasty-ass gringo from, you know, wherever the fuck. Now, I talked about the previous single released by Miracore, which was primarily this very folk-driven thing, not a lick of black metal in sight. So I was kind of hoping that if she was doing another album, it would lean more towards folk and kind of excise some of the black metal stuff, like, a lot. Unfortunately, the song comes swinging right out of the gate with that grinding black metal obnoxious just kind of brick wall, and I'm just like, I'm so annoyed. But then, of course, there's these little pockets where Amelie, the vocalist and, you know, main driving force, her vocals go from the grating, you know, harsh black metal style to a more haughty, gothic, just absolutely haunting, beautiful thing. Like, that's the thing that frustrates me about Amelie doing Miracore. She has an absolutely gorgeous singing voice, so it really bugs me that she wasted doing what is probably my least favorite subgenre of metal, and probably of all music, to be honest. I mean, there are some folk things in here. Like, when it gets to the bridge, there's this neat little melodic interlude from a Hardanger fiddle, which, you know, kind of sounds like you walked into a really shady sort of Middle Earth pub or something with some light percussive instrumentation. And then that, after a little bit more grinding black metal obnoxiousness, that same melody returns towards the end, this time being ominously hummed by, you know, a group of voices. So those little pockets of just really excellent dark folk songwriting elements are really good. I just wish there wasn't a whole lot of black metal in between it all. But anyway, Alex had some thoughts he wanted to chime in on as well, so let's cut to him.
I honestly didn't know what I was expecting going into this one, but for what it is... Merkur is a tricky one. I mentioned before that I've never been too into black metal, mostly because the production quality almost always sucks. But this isn't sounding too terrible. Now, the clean vocals are interesting here, even if I have no goddamn idea what she's thinking about. But it sounds like a weird mix of Enya and Norwegian black metal and Celtic folk music. Like I said, this is really too tricky for me to really dissect, but it's interesting, I guess.
Thank you for your contributions. And now, for the last two songs of the week from the same artist. Well, okay, possibly three, depending on how you choose to count it.
Yeah.
So, last week, Thursday to be precise, or was it the Thursday before, I think?
I guess the before.
Yeah, Thursday before, yeah, before. A mysterious countdown was posted by none other than Mr. Golf Wang himself, Tyler the Creator, and it was that age-old message of 7 days. You know, for those of you who spent the 90s watching shitty slasher movies, and we were just like, what does this mean? 7 days? What could be happening in 7 days?
I mean, trailer for the Jellies? Doing an album or that other shit we got that's on Viceland?
Yeah. I mean, there was a trailer for Nuts and Bolts, which I still haven't seen the trailer
yet. Yeah.
But eventually 7 days passed, and last Thursday, we got two, or like I said, three, depending on how you count it, new songs from Monsieur Tyler himself. The first of these is named after one of the greatest memes that ever existed. Who dat boy? Oh shit, what up? I'm telling you, Tyler's a man after my own heart. Yeah. So, and the other song is called 911/Mr. Lonely, a track which features a Busta Gets contributions, most notably some vocals from Frank Ocean, and a bit of spoken word from Schoolboy Q himself. So, let's start off with this first song here, Who Dat Boy, which also happens to feature a guest verse from ASAP Rocky.
This is like some weird shit. Like, we're gonna start like this very creepy horror movie vibe, where it's like a bunch, for like maybe I guess in like a, should I say synth, not synth, but more like these tunes where it starts, and this production, this horror style production beat, it is it's like very mesmerizing. It's like, oh shit, this is something like you that'd be on the at the beginning of a horror movie or like a monster movie, concerning like concerning the whole video start with Tyler having like something wrong with his face.
Doesn't he like I don't know, so like white face on him in the video.
Yep, we got it sold by by Surgeon A$AP Rocky.
Yeah, that horror movie thing. Yeah, especially in the beat. So this is on, you know, the more menacing end of Tyler songs. This almost kind of sounds like it's a more elaborate version of something you'd hear on, like, Goblin. Which I would hope, I mean, Goblin was a good album, and seeing as how I didn't, like, cherry bomb all that much, I would hope he'd go back to a more menacing style. And of course, you know, his flow is still as creepy as ever. There's, you know, some really great bars in there, especially in his last verse, where the rhyme scheme sort of bounced back and forth between, like, you know, manipulating the Spanish language in order to achieve some cool rhymes here and there. And then of course A$AP Rocky gets in some pretty cool bars in there, including some references to, I think, his position in the XXL freshman class. And, of course, some jabs at Vince Staples. Are they jabs? Do they count as jabs? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Are they jabs? Are they jabs? What they were cool each other, but I guess not. I don't know.
I mean, I guess that was just like cheap reference. Because I do believe A$AP was on the XL freshman list like the year before Vince got on. So I guess it was just something that kind of worked with the rhyme scheme.
I thought he wasn't. I thought he turned that shit down.
Oh shit, right. That's why I got him confused with Ty Dolla $ign. I don't know why.
Like I said, he turned that shit down. And also, since I mentioned that, I forgot to mention one rapper who also turned it down. Rose Sweatshirt turned that shit down.
Ew.
I should have mentioned that too, but for getting off track. Who that boy? This song is definitely fire.
And now we move on to the other song, one that exemplifies the more soul, creepy R&B side of Tyler's sound, 911/Mr. Yep. Lonely.
Yeah, and you know what? This has to be the best one to track because it does got that soul feel. And I do want to say the song, like part of the song does I want to say it got some type of an R&B song. I think it does. I'm trying to remember at the top of my head, but anyway, it's very well used here. Used here with Frank Ocean doing the vocals, and I like the way it transitioned into the next track, Mr. Lonely, which does got this. Which I will say I really dig the hell out of this. Like, I've been listening to this shit like possibly 2-4 times back to back. Like, I play it again. This song, like, I don't, like, do you think it's kind of a new album or some shit? Like,
well, it's been like, you know, long enough, if we're counting about a little over 2 years or so since I think Wolf came out. No, wait, not Wolf, Cherry Bomb. Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like, whatever he's going with this, with these tracks, I'm hoping something in the line of, you know, these songs, like, yeah, maybe something like Wolf, like, or maybe like Goblin, I don't know, because I didn't really care that much about Cherry Bomb either. But yeah, like I said, these three title tracks, they are some fire. Especially now one, especially last one, like, that one really got me bumping.
Okay. Yeah, so I was, you know, both songs are strong in their own ways. I was obviously vibing more with the Who Dat Boy, because that's more how I like my Tyler. I like him to be just like this intimidating, menacing, off-hinged threat. While the 911 and Mr. Lonely are, you know, they're decent songs, but I don't feel like they have that undercurrent of just weird menace that I like in some of the R&B Tyler songs. Like, you kind of get what I mean? Like, some of his more soulful songs often have this underlayer of deranged menace to them that you think this guy's going to snap any minute. That, I guess that's more of what I prefer out of my Tyler music, and probably why I didn't jive with Cherry Bomb all that much. But if there's a new album, I'm hoping that maybe we do get more of that, you know? And maybe we get a song that's just as much of a banger as Tamale! Or, you know, Domo 23. And where the fuck is the jellies, you bastard? We're about halfway through summer, motherfucker. Chop chop.
Wait, is it summer or fall?
Summer.
Is it summer? Oh shit, then this is it's July now. We ain't got no fucking date.
Yeah. But anyway, we've gone on long enough. Those are our thoughts on all songs for the past week or so. So now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have the news. And we're back. So we got...
Boy!
Okay, then. So we got about 5 news topics to discuss here. First off, related to the great dumpster fire that was the Musician Deaths of 2016. Mm-hmm. In particular, relating to the passing of Fife Dawg, MC of the classic hip-hop group A Tribe Called Quest. Now... During a memorial last year, eulogizing Fife Dawg, Andre 3000 of OutKast revealed that OutKast, not Andre 3000, not Big Boy, OutKast, was actually working with A Tribe Called Quest on a collaborative album. And recently, Big Boy divulged a little bit more details on this. Apparently, this wasn't just like a conceptual thing, like in the planning stages. To hear Big Boy say it, quote, "We were talking about doing A Tribe Called Cast album. It was real. Q-Tip flew to Atlanta. Ali Shaheed Muhammad. We all met at Dre's house. We got to the point of picking out the beats for the album. Then some kind of way, everybody started doing stuff. And then Fife, you know. So it was happening, though. It definitely was happening.
And, well, it will never hear the collaboration. Never.
Well.
That's fucked.
There's a vague sort of, let's say, a consolation prize. Now, we know Andre 3000 was featured on We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service, but Big Boy revealed that he actually recorded some tracks with Fife Dawg himself. They were able to get together, record some tracks, and I don't know if this was part of the planned Tribe Called Cast album, or if this was for some other project between the two, but Big Boy states that he does have plans to possibly at some point put out these collaborative tracks. Apparently, they didn't come out on the latest Big Boy album, Boomiverse.
Which is true, I know.
But who knows? Maybe there'll be like a vinyl, a deluxe vinyl, or maybe like a bonus edition that comes out sometime in the next 6 months that features the collaborative tracks, or they just pop up on a SoundCloud somewhere.
Who knows what could happen? I mean, if let's say tomorrow a track from them comes out, well, it can happen.
You're gonna know. Like the second it happens, we're all gonna know.
It'll be on their first thing.
Yep. Although this would be interesting to hear. I mean, freaking A Tribe Called Quest managed to get OutKast, like, actually together back in the studio, not just one or the other, but like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if how much they may have recorded. Like, I don't think they ever probably got as far as like a complete album, but I figure they probably had to have completed at least a couple of songs, probably.
Yeah, it was enough for an EP or some shit.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to hear. Yeah. You know, the last relics of one of the greatest MCs of our time.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have to wait and see on that. Anyway, next news story. So, a few weeks ago, we talked about the retirement of LA radio icon Rodney Bingenheimer, whose 40-plus year stint with K-Rock Radio played a fundamental role in the exposure of many underground punk, new wave, and grunge bands into, you know, mainstream prominence through his show Rodney on the Rock. And we thought he was all done with there, but no, apparently he's getting right back into it. He's revealed that he landed a new show on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. The channel Okay, so he's hosting a weekly show on the channel Little Steven's Underground Garage. It'll be beginning July 16th and, you know, premiering at 9 p.m. He joins a roster of various other guest DJs to, you know, he's basically going to be doing more or less the same thing he always did. He's going to be, you know, championing, like, the underground to sort of, I guess, a mass audience, depending on how many people actually have SiriusXM radio. Sadly, I don't. I kind of want to, though.
Yeah. I would get the thing. I mean, you know, I don't really listen to radio that much.
I mean, I listen to it quite a bit, but although mainly it's just like the college radio I listen to. But if I ever get a chance, maybe a free trial or something, or get a hold on an actual car stereo that can, you know, process SiriusXM, I'd be interested to check this out. Good to know that he'll still be keeping, you know, the lineage going, his legacy going forward in a new environment.
He'll keep going on if he's in 60s.
Yeah, he's in his late 60s.
Yep, and he's still going strong.
Who knows? Maybe by the time he gets to the point where he would theoretically die, they'll probably have like that jar in head technology like Futurama or some shit.
That could happen.
Yeah, please. I want to put my head in a robot body and, you know, a jar. Or maybe a jar on a robot body. So that way I can join Robo-Nixon. Wait, where the fuck is I going with this?
Fuck if I know.
I lost track here. Let's get it here. Let's go to the next story. Okay, so anyone who's paid attention to, you know, music formats and, you know, just the landscape in general will know that obviously vinyl sales have been resurging quite a bit since about late 2000s and continuing strong today to the point where this past year, record sales for the first time possibly ever overtook streaming and digital downloads in terms of just revenue brought in. And it seems like certain companies are, you know, very much aware of this, and it appears like Sony Music is going to be reopening and establishing some new vinyl pressing plants in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Sony's native country. For the first time in over 30 years, well, nearly 30 years, obviously, you have to remember, Sony was the same company that pioneered Walkmans and the CD format, so they effectively...
And Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Bo.
Well, not that's not, you know, relevant. What is relevant is they pioneered the formats that more or less killed vinyl's prominence. But, you know, everybody loves a good retro revival, so I guess now's a good time as any for Sony to cash in on some of that vinyl record money. You know, they killed the thing. Now they want to resurrect the corpse of the thing.
It's like, we killed you, now you're alive. Now sell to make you some money.
Yep, this is like some Rick and Morty shit, man. They killed the thing, they brought it back just to do its bidding and make it money. Or in other words, what is my purpose? You pass butter.
What's my purpose? Well, fuck if I know.
You print records. Oh, no. Yeah, welcome to life, pal. But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what a mega huge company like Sony is capable of doing as far as, you know, pushing vinyl back, you know, to even more mainstream prominence. Because if it's already making, like, a lot of money with the availability of vinyl pressing plants, I know they actually opened one up not too long ago downtown, like within the past... year or so, I believe. And yeah, I'm just curious to see. Maybe it'll, you know, push vinyl so much that maybe it'll probably make it a little bit cheaper, which might entice people to buy more of it, which will, you know, feed into vinyls being able to be more cheaper, and then, you know, people buy more, you know, just kind of in a cycle like that. But we shall see. We shall see.
Who knows what the future will bring?
Anyway, moving on. So apparently some stuff has been going on over in the realm of MTV. Anybody who's been paying attention to the media giant knew that in 2016 they relaunched themselves into a sort of Vice/Noisy-esque kind of journalistic enterprise with a lot of, you know, promising young writers. who were, you know, pushing the boundaries of music journalism and whatnot. And unfortunately, this past week or so, they announced that they were laying off quite a handful of their staff members. I believe at least 12, as far as I saw. And switching gears from long-form written content to short-form video content, because I guess you got to compete in the YouTube market. Guys, just a bit of quick advice. Put in some air quotes ironic Nazism if you're looking for views. I hear that's big on YouTube.
Pretty much brings in the money or views.
We're fucked. So there's been a bunch of information that sort of come out in the immediate aftermath and fallout of this restructuring. And one of the more interesting ones, or I guess rather one of the more interesting in a frustrating way, was that one of the things that may have contributed to the decline of MTV News was the pressure placed on them directly from outside music artists. So Spin Magazine published this big article that delved into, you know, the background of this fallout, of this restructuring. And within the story are two rather prominent anecdotes that both relate to the same thing of music artists forcing writers to take down mildly critical reviews. First up was the group Kings of Leon. When they released the song Waste a Moment, the site published a quick review which, among other things, referred to the song as almost aggressively anonymous. In response, the band threatened to cancel its appearance on the MTV Europe Music Awards unless the article was either revised or deleted. And
for real.
In response, MTV complied and deleted the article, in addition to the site's corporate executives putting into place a policy that they were no longer allowed to post reviews that ran less than 500 words. Now, according to Spin's Jordan Sargent, quote, MTV associated those kinds of blog posts with snarkiness and criticism, both of which were deemed detrimental to the network's broader ability to work with artists who may be the subjects of such posts. Now, you could argue to an extent that Aggressively Anonymous is a bit snarky, but even then, come on. I'm pretty sure there are people who could have said much worse things about your song. Like, they could have gone full angry video game nerd on this song. This is kind of tame in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, this just sounds pretty tame. It's like, it's not that they said they, it's not that they say it fucking sucked. It just said, well, it's good, but there's a little problem with it, but I can still like it. It's like, it's constructive criticism. It's not like they're trashing you. It's like, that seems kind of paving to do that shit. Like, for real?
Now, okay, Kings of Leon, I could theoretically at least understand. I mean, I have no illusions about their general morality and their general ethics as people. But this next one kind of just really gets me in a way I didn't think it would.
Yeah.
A similar scenario followed, only this time the artist in question was none other than Chance the Rapper. So, a writer for the site published a concert review, a review of a Chance the Rapper concert that primarily focused on an emotional disconnect that they felt while listening to, while seeing the concert. And I think I kind of remember seeing this one. I think it had something to do with the fact that the writer might have been of a different faith or belief system than Chance himself is, because, you know, Chance the Rapper, a guy primarily of the Christian faith. And upon catching this review, Chance's management alerted MTV and said they would never work with MTV again. And MTV complied by deleting the article. Okay, to go back to the Spin article for a minute, Chance's manager Pat Corcoran confirmed that this was true, writing, upon the publication of the article, Chance and I got together and both agreed that the article was offensive. When we brought our concerns to MTV, our rep agreed that the article was a harsh shot and took ownership of the editorial misstep. From there, MTV chose to, on their own volition, to remove the piece. We have a long history with MTV, which we cherish. You might notice Chance will be appearing in the season opener of Wild N' Out tomorrow night, June 29th on MTV.
Okay, this is okay. Aaron, this is more this morning that of all people that did this is Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, here's the thing. Going on to the emotional disconnect thing, Like we said, Chance is a man of faith. His faith is an integral part of who he is as a person, and it shines through in a lot of his music. Whatever happened to Turn the Other Cheek, man?
Yeah, it's just like one criticism. It's just like one small flaw in it. It's not that harsh.
Okay, the article itself at times maybe was a little, but even then, I could imagine people saying much worse things, like, directly to you.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, at the risk of possibly saying something even more offensive, Chance, and Chance's management, in the words of a very intelligent man, bitch, sit down, be humble.
Yep.
This isn't complicated, man. And apparently, it goes far beyond more than that. Just to cover one more anecdote, the Spin article quotes an editor that told the staff not to publish any stories about DJ Khaled, quote, unless it's like, oh, Khaled no. is great. Because apparently they were very interested in maintaining a solid relationship with DJ Khaled to, you know, have him, you know, promote MTV stuff, appear on their big events and whatnot. So, yeah, you can imagine that someone like Mar, for example, probably wouldn't last a day at this job.
So, you're pretty much saying, yeah, don't review this music. They're like, really think you might as well say, don't review nothing at all. Because you're basically saying, can you see what bothers me about this whole shit? It's like the whole Chris don't know what the fuck they're talking about bullshit that they've been pulling recently. Which is like, oh my god, get the fuck over it. They said one thing that you don't agree with and you think they're trashing you. Get the fuck off your high horse. Like, for real.
It's like, okay, Chance, dude, like, every music blog was worshipping the ground you walk on with Coloring Book. Like, everyone. Even I thought it was a solid album overall. But, like, so everyone everywhere is, like, worshipping the ground you walk on, and you get mad about one particular article from MTV. Like, in an ocean of, let's put it like this, like, in an ocean of, you know, positivity, you focus on the one negative to the point where you pretty much used, you know, your media influence and power to threaten MTV to remove the piece. And I don't care what your management says, oh, on their own volition, bullshit. You threatened to pull sponsorship and, you know, that fucking happened and they deleted it. You knew it was gonna happen. That's just, wow, that's really scummy. That's like, okay, Mark, I don't know if you remember, but I don't know if you ever heard, like, a while back when Bryan Adams, you know, that douche, into deleting not just reviews, but any information about the guy, period, including, like, his name, his albums, his touring history, anything. Like, they couldn't print anything at the request of his lawyers.
That is a dick move. The more I'm disappointed in this, the more disappointed Chance, to be honest.
It's like, we expect better, like, from you.
People call it the Barack Obama of rap. Sound like, you know, he's from Chicago, all that shit. You get it. But this is not a good look on you, dude.
Yeah, it's just, like, okay, I'm not gonna sit here, and I need to qualify this. I understand that occasionally there can be, like, a review which theoretically crosses the line. Like, if it gets super personal to the point where it's basically just a bunch of, like, character attacks. Like, if it was a review that said, like, you know, Chance the Rapper has sex with goats, that I would get. But, like, dude, even then, you can't just tell them to take it down. Like, you gotta have a little bit more integrity and be able to take it on the chin a little bit.
Yeah, just doing their job. They're not trying to attack you. They're just thinking what they think of your music. If for the most part, people think your music is good. I mean, like you got 99.9% positivity with people loving your music. That one, that little speck, that's nothing.
Pretty much. Like, Okay, I gotta move on because this story is really pissing me off. So let's move on to something. Let's move on to our last story this week, which can actually give us a little bit of joy. Now,
that makes us laugh.
There's an often quoted expression about the great gangster criminal Al Capone that, despite the multitudes of extremely illegal shit that he was involved in during his life, the thing that ultimately did him in was tax evasion. Not like the alcohol smuggling or, you know, the shootouts and all that. No, just not paying taxes. I say that because Billy McFarland, the co-founder of the glorious shit show that was Fyre Festival, has actually been arrested, specifically for the crime of wire fraud. Now, if you're wondering what specifically this entails, okay, so on Friday, he was arrested and charged with federal wire fraud in the Southern District of New York. Acting Manhattan attorney June Kim has accused McFarland of providing false financial information to at least two investors who put upwards of $1.2 million toward the event.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I'm guessing when we saw those, I remember a couple, like, a while ago, in the immediate aftermath of this, we found, like, the document, like, the pitch document, so to say. And seeing how bare bones that was and, like, the deliberate, you know, amateur hour aesthetic of the whole thing, I can kind of believe that he falsified financial information. Anyway, going on. In a press release, Kim specifically notes two incidents in which McFarland perpetrated a scheme to defraud. Allegedly, he told his investors that Fyre Media had earned millions of dollars in revenue from artist bookings, when the actual reality was less than 60,000.
Okay. Well.
Additionally, McFarland allegedly provided one investor with, quote, an altered brokerage statement that purported to show that he owned shares of a specific stock worth over $2.5 million, when in reality he owned shares of that stock valued at less than $1,500.
Whoa, 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 damn.
Lot of very sketchy financial dealings here. I really want to get a look at some of these documents myself. Like, I know obviously we're just, you know, plebeians, so we don't get access to court documentation, but I need so badly to see what it is this guy drafted in order to fool investors into funding his bullshit. Man, just to think, we're almost at the end of this. Like, think about it. If he gets arrested, according to the article, he's facing up to 20 years in prison.
In other words, they're not making this easy on him.
Absolutely not. And there goes the plans for Fyre Festival 2018.
unless Jarrell does some shit by himself.
I mean, it's not like that was ever going to happen, but now it's even less likely.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I read how Sturgeon described as alongside poor Ja Rule, like poor him. No, that nigga ain't poor. Don't you saying poor Ja Rule for nothing? He isn't this shit too.
He can afford a yacht somehow. We still haven't figured that out. But yeah, so just one last detail. Okay, so according to a statement from Assistant Director in Charge William F. Sweeney Jr., under McFarland's direction, Fyre Media created a promoter's marketplace for entertainment bidding. In addition to this initial business venture, McFarland went one step further in establishing a subsidiary of the company, Fyre Festival LLC. But in order to drive the success of both entities, as alleged, McFarland truly put on a show misrepresenting the financial status of his businesses in order to rake in lucrative investment deals. In the end, the very public failure of the Fyre Festival signaled that something just wasn't right, as we allege in detail today.
He fucked up.
20 years.
Don't drop the soap.
Well, why did you have to tell him that? Now he's going to know to not drop it. Yeah, he's going to have the drop the soap dream. Say hi to Tom Dubois for me while you're at it. Whatever the fuck was that weird dude he was dreaming about with, like, the 2 foot long thing. That dream was creepy, man. But yeah, McFarlane, dude, your festival was a source of great entertainment for all of us, but I guess all good things have to come to an end eventually. Oh, what's that I hear? It sounds like Alex had something to say as well. Let's see how he expands on our opinions here.
I'm dying.
Same here, man. Same here. Man, I was kind of hoping he would have avoided arrest for at least another year. Then we could have gotten Fyre Festival 2018 and an even bigger shit show.
Oh, but
like we said, all things gotta, you know, end eventually, so.
Yep.
Well, that about covers all the news topics for this week, so we have one last thing to cover, and that is the new album releases for July 7th, 2017, of which there are about 5 of note. This week is off to a bit of a slow start. Starting from the top, we have the newest double album from the Melvins titled A Walk with Love and Death, the latest album from death metalers Decapitated titled Anti-Cult. We have the debut album from none other than rapper 21 Savage titled Issa, I-S-S-A.
Oh, yeah. He got a joint coming out.
We have a new album from Twista titled Crook County.
Oh, I don't know what's that either.
And we have a new album from indie music collective Broken Social Scene titled Hug of Thunder. So that covers the new album releases, and now is, of course, the part where we clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Mark, where can they find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter via MacTavern Media, you know, all that shit. And, of course, my site, The Mind of Hybrid One, at thehybrid1.wordpress.com. Recently, I've been covering, you know, the new anime season. Most of it is not good. You had to find two shows that I say, oh, I like those. Oh, and also expect my new story, or faction, the Money Dance arc to come this Friday, 7/7/17.
Yay! Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Barracuda. You can email me if you have any questions, comments, or concerns that are music-related or podcast-related, robert@surrealresolution.com. Subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video goes up every Friday on my YouTube channel. Just search Rob Barracuda or Decibel Boost Podcast. Also, in addition, remember, we have the first of the Decibel Boost monthly album roundups going up this Thursday. So, look forward to that. And, of course, this is the official music podcast of Surreal Resolution, which you can follow on Twitter at SurrealRezo. Find us online at www.surrealresolution.com. And, of course, find the podcast on its own subdomain, decibelboost.surrealresolution.com. While you're there, listen to all our past episodes, and listen to our other podcasts as well, two of which I'm actually appearing on recently. So if you like gaming, check out The Training Stage, where I'm on their latest episode. If you like movies, check out Salty Flicks, where I will be joining the boys in reviewing Baby Driver. If you like anime, check out Podcast O&A. They're probably going to have a pretty big episode covering all the shit coming out of Anime Expo.
Oh, definitely.
I'm sadly not on that one, so you'll have to go elsewhere for my weebness. Of course, be sure to read all our great written articles. Unfortunately, because I'm busy with the album roundups, I won't have a review out this week. But, of course, you can still check out other written stuff. In particular, our still ongoing write-ups of My Hero Academia Season 2. Which reminds me, I gotta see what's airing this season to watch.
Well, I don't know if I'm much you'll like.
You never know. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat if you like bullshit. Nothing else to say beyond that. And, of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. That'll about do it for this week's episode. Until next time, Those goddamn bridge levels, I fucking swear.
I need a drink.